Good evening, James McCanny with my Science Hour, July 8th, 2021, and many topics to cover tonight. My main science topic, I will be talking about batteries. Batteries are in the news because there's a lot of fires lately. I brought this up last week, so I'm going to go into depth a little bit more this week on the topic of batteries and the supply chain. And I'm also familiar with other companies in the battery business, including some that are building the so-called Edison battery, et cetera. And so I'll give you some insight into where this is going, where it's been. And also, I mentioned last week about the issue that there are tons of lithium ion, that's kind of a tongue twister, lithium ion batteries coming into the country from foreign sources that are simply burning out within very short time. I had this myself, and I started going, wait a minute, you know, it's not just me, it's not just one battery. So I started investigating, and all over the place, people are buying replacement batteries for their computer, their phone. Look at all of the things that have batteries. Even your toaster might have a battery, or your blender, or your juicer, appliances in the kitchen, your laundry, your washer, your clothes washing machine, on and on. And, you know, when the lights stay on, you turn the machine off, there's still power in there for a clock, there's that type of thing. There's a battery in there. And if that battery goes bad, guess what, boys and girls? Your device no longer works because it's set up with a timer. It's set up with a little program in there that's operating to fill the water, to run it for a certain amount of time, and then rinse, and then go through the second rinse cycle, and then spin dry, and how much time, etc. All that's done with little microchips now. And a lot of times there's a battery in there also that helps with this process. Well, if that battery goes bad, your machine isn't going to work. Okay, so... But the bigger topic I'll be covering tonight is with big batteries, the kind that most of you will probably never buy or ever want to buy. But they affect your life, believe me. And the reason, like I say, I'm in this business because of the wing generator and now the multi-blade systems. These will take a minimum of, say, you know, minimum of 10 batteries for the little guys, the 2 kilowatt sizes, et cetera. But if you get up to 10 kilowatts, you might have 20 batteries. You get up to 15 kilowatts, you might have 30 batteries. You get up to 25 or 50 kilowatts, you might be up to 32 batteries. And then there are multiples of those batteries, multiples. So if you have, like just to give you an example, the 50 kilowatt wing generator system that I used in the XPRIZE, where I was an international finalist and was awarded the Technology Innovation Achievement Award, I had 32 big batteries in that system. And that's a lot of power. I mean, it's a 380-volt system. So you multiply 32 times 12 volts each, so you get 384 volts. That's a big battery bank. And that's one layer deep. It could have been 64 deep. It could have been 96 deep, but multiples of 32. But the thing is, where do you get these batteries? Well, I have sources. I have places to get my batteries that other people just don't know about. And so I can get batteries in quantity. In fact, I'm going to be talking a little bit on this show about opening it up to the general audience out there with a 20 battery minimum. In other words, I'm not going to ship one or two batteries. It's not worth my time. But, 20 batteries. And so we're talking about potentially a maybe a $16,000 to $18,000 order, including shipping. So now, how do you move these batteries around? Well, that's another thing that I have worked out, and so that I can deliver them right to your door. And it's expensive, but if you want batteries, that's the way it is. That's the way it is. And you know, so the, anyway, but I'll be talking about that. And then also other batteries like the Edison battery, the lithium ion replacement batteries that are sometimes used. You can get them in different form factors, like the kind that look like your car battery, that type deep cycle. And then you can get them in a form factor that's like a power wall, which is the Tesla kind of innovation. And now there's other companies. I sell the product of Generac, which is a very similar product. It's a different technology. It's not the lithium ion used by Tesla. It's a different technology, and it's not susceptible to fires. But they're expensive. They're expensive. I mean, we're talking big dollars here for these batteries, but they're the essential part of an alternative energy system. Okay, well, I'll jump into that in a minute. I'll come back to that topic. First, a few things here. Tour de France. Now, a number of weeks ago, I announced that every year I watch the Tour de France as much as possible. And so you got to get up early in the morning to see it start. But it was yesterday morning, they were up in the mountains and climbing up and up. And that's difficult because you're dealing with high altitudes. You're dealing with steep grades. And the winner of this, the guy that keeps pulling away from the crowd, has very good strategy. So his strategy was to stay with the pack. And he has a, I'm not sure what you call the guy that's out in front of the, these are teams. So he's got a teammate that works and works and works and keeps this guy up to the front of the pack. And, but this guy, the guy that's really going to, that they believe can win the race, is second. He's behind the lead guy. And I don't know if you call it the blocking the wind guy, or there must be a name in bicycle world, you know, that for this guy that's the lead guy. And that's then the second guy is the one who's benefiting because he's sheltered because the wind is coming by and he's not hitting the wind full speed. And then at a pre-designated time, like, you know, a number of miles or kilometers before the peak of the mountain, all of a sudden, the lead guy drops out, and he's, like, exhausted. He's like, you know, but then the guy that's they want to win a race comes out from behind, and then he kicks it on the last leg of getting up to the top of the peak, the summit of the mountain. And then the part that I just sit on the couch and watch this, these guys are coming down the mountainside on these curvy roads, no barrier. There's no barrier there. If you go sliding off that road, it's sayonara, buddy. You're going to be going a long ways over that cliff and down into who knows where, trees or something down there, rocks. So these guys are clearly professionals. And I've personally seen bicyclists. And I followed one bicyclist one time. I was driving the safety car, the kind of like with the lights blinking and stuff. And I couldn't keep up with him in a car. He was going down a long grade on a mountainside. And, oh, my goodness, I'm like, if you hit a rock, buddy, it's like you're going to, you know, at that speed, hitting even a rock, you're going to go flying. And the concentration and, oh, my goodness. So these guys are flying down this mountainside, but the guy who won, his strategy was to get a minute and a half ahead of the rest of the pack going up the mountain. So he did basically a sprint. And once he got over the summit, they couldn't catch him. They could not catch this guy. So I think he won by maybe a minute and a half or something like that. In fact, oddly enough, the power went out. And so I never saw the end of the race. So if you saw the end of the race yesterday, I assume this name is Van Aert, A-E-R-T, I think is the kid's name, or the guy. These are not kids. These are adults. I call them kids. They're kids to me. They're a lot younger than I am, so they're kids to me. Anyway, highly recommend. And then the scenery is amazing. They've got helicopters. They must have drones flying around, so you get views of, you know, old cathedrals and little towns, and it's just just like you were right there. You get a better view than the people on the street. And the French people are kind of crazed about this. This is like the equivalent of the Super Bowl in the United States. And these people are out on the roads screaming and jumping up and down and beating on the wall of the barrier. And some of them are out in the street screaming and jumping up and down. So anyway, it's quite the show. But I mean, for me, one of the great benefits is seeing the French countryside. And a couple of weeks ago, there was the tour of Italy, another bicycle tour. And so anyway, I suggest you watch that. And this year, there's a whole new group of people who are leading the pack. Last year and 2 years ago, there was a contingency from South America who were doing very well. I think they came in second 2 years ago and won it last year. A contingency from South America, which is totally unheard of. Totally unheard of with a, you know, because the French and the Europeans take bicycling very serious, and I think they're taking back their turf, so to speak. Anyway, that's just something I highly recommend. It's on early in the morning. I think it's on ESPN Sports, one of those sports channels. Okay, let's see. A quick story here. Florida Light and Power. This sent in by a listener. And they want a $2 billion rate increase. And it's interesting when you see this, because I've been talking about this on my radio show, that the PUC, the Public Utility Commission, is what should regulate profits. In fact, with a public utility, in the old style, there should not be any profit. But right now, they're trying to lay this this $2 billion rate increase on the public there, who is really cannot afford it. I mean, we're talking about your condominium falling down. Holy cow, you know, these are lots of retired people on fixed incomes. That's Florida. So to take a $2 billion rate increase, the people just don't have the money. But the point is that Florida is one of the largest, top 10, largest privately held, privately investor held utilities. So you really can't call it a utility. It's a business. Let's call it what it is. And the PUC has no more power to regulate this than the man in the moon. But this article makes it sound like, okay, if they increase or permit this increase, then it was the PUC that did it, not this private investor company called Florida Light and Power, FLP, FLNP or whatever. And this is like in California, etc. Private companies taking over the public utility companies for profit. And when they stick it to the ratepayers, hey, what are you going to do? Either pay it or go without electricity. What's that choice? Anyway, I thought that's worth talking about. And that's an issue where the legislatures, the you know, federal laws, etc., change to allow these public held companies, or in this case, privately held companies with a group of private investors, to take over the utilities and basically run them as a business for profit. Okay, jumping to another topic, as I suppose many of you know, my advanced degree in physics is in nuclear and solid state physics. So I worked for 25 years in the telecommunications industry in solid state, and working with networks and many, many different aspects of networking, which deals with telecommunication protocols, encryption, you name it. I worked on it at a high level in a secure setting. And so I want to say this as a plausible explanation for the failure of lithium-ion batteries. It could be due to simply sloppy manufacturing, poor, you know, people getting into this business, and very poor quality, that's it, manufacturing. Or what about this? What if, because 5G is prevalent now in every place, and Lithium-ion batteries, it's a solid-state device. It is a solid-state storage device that is like a it's like an electronic circuit. And the more you can make, the smaller you can make them, the more power you can pack into your lithium-ion battery and then discharge them. And that's why they have a memory, for example, unlike, say, capacitors, supercapacitors, that do not have a memory. You can charge them up a little. You can charge them up a lot. They don't remember, whereas a lithium-ion battery develops a memory. So if you discharge your lithium-ion battery, say, on your phone, and it only goes down 30% during the day, and at night you plug it in, you want it fully charged the next day, it's going to learn that that's what its cycle is. It's a learning process that goes on in the solid-state device itself, something that's unexpected, but then again, technology has all kinds of unexpected results. But being a solid-state device, it is affected by radiation. What if, and I'm saying this because there are technical reasons for believing this to be true, what if 5G and in general microwave radiation causes the lithium-ion cells to discharge? Now all of a sudden you have your phone, you're in your office, you've got your telecommunications, you're on Wi-Fi, so you have a Wi-Fi system there, telecommunications, running your computer or whatever. But you also got your phone there. So it's right in the middle of the blast zone, so to speak, of the radiation. And so 5G is a different animal. So my projection is that look at what Elon Musk is doing. He's putting up tens of thousands of satellites that blanket the Earth with 5G radiation. Now, what if that little bit of radiation is enough to get a resonant frequency of the lithium-ion delta circuits, the little microcircuits? And all of a sudden, you have something that can discharge that little capacitor, that little hybrid circuit. And so all of a sudden, you have conflicting interests that somebody never thought about. So they have two conflicting technologies, one that's destroying the other. Now, I'm just saying this is a speculation, but I'm saying it's a good speculation, and I'm believing for the same reason that 5G affects the human body and causes disturbances, because your body is an antenna. There's no question about it. There are all kinds of things that happen in your body that are related to radiation. Here's a good example. People with epilepsy is a nervous disorder that the nervous ions are firing the nervous system is out of control, in a sense, and people have erratic activity. Their muscles are reacting to signals. However, there's a thing, it's called Sundowner syndrome, and there's a number of syndromes that have this exact same name. So anyway, the Sundowner syndrome for epilepsy is that when the sun sets, people with epilepsy have a short period of time of relief. And what this amounts to is there's something electrical going on. There's also, that's called the Terminator line, that's the, not related to Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it has to do with the difference between day and nighttime. It's that line on the Earth where the sun is on one side and then the nighttime is on the other side. With that line where the darkness meets the light is called the Terminator line, and there's something electrical that goes on there. Now, I just read another story here where people, I get a kick out of this. NASA is finally doing some studies. They're going to determine what's going on up in the upper ionosphere because there's some electrical currents up there and it surprises them. Good grief. I mean, they're going to actually send up a sounding probe that might have already gone up, two rockets, to see what's going on. They're going to study this, morons. But anyway, the point is, one of their observations is that at high noon seems to be the most activity. And so what they theorize is that the sunlight comes in, it's the hottest, it's the most direct, so therefore there's an upwelling of heat, like physical motion in the atmosphere at that point, and therefore that's what's causing this electrical current to move around. And I mean, so stupid. Obviously, it's exactly what I've been saying for 40 years and more, is that is where the sunward electron current comes in. It's a part of the electrical discharge, which is the bulk of the electrical discharge. And of course, it hits exactly on high noon on the Earth. And so that's what's going on. But of course, those morons will never figure it out, nor will they ever get close to the real explanation, because they're tier two scientists. The tier one scientists, the military scientists, fully know exactly what I'm talking about, but they allow this tier two science to go on, money to be spent, ridiculous answers to come out, publications to be published in peer-reviewed journals, respectable peer-reviewed journals. You know, what it amounts to is a bunch of old men that sit in universities that never did anything, never ran a business, never had to do anything. And the peer review process is to keep these people sitting where they're sitting. And they don't have to do anything. They don't have to have any right answers, because they decide what the right answer is because they're so smart. If you want to see a little more on peer review, I have a subpage on my webpage. It's called Peer Review Subpage. And it's basically it started out with the 10 top reasons why I don't publish in peer-reviewed journals. And then it grew from there. So anyway, okay, enough of that. But the whole point of my discussion there was that the sundowner syndrome is proof that something electrical is going on in the body, and with epilepsy and with other nervous disorders, and to actually have relief. Now the question is, could you duplicate that condition that the atmosphere is doing naturally for people with epilepsy and other, they're similar to, there's a number of they call them diseases, but they're a problem with the nervous system firing bolts of electricity off, and the muscles react, and the people have physical outward reactions that you can see. So anyway, a lot of topics to cover here yet tonight. On a radio show yesterday, on John Moore's show, I made a comment that I'm trying to move people away from gravity water filters. And, you know, for decades, my biggest selling product has been replacement water filter elements. And now I'm moving to the new ones. It talks about that on my webpage. But at any rate, somebody called in and said, oh, do you mean that the Imperial filters that I just bought are no good? And I said, no, that's not the point at all. They are fine. They're very good. They don't work in the shower. And then so somebody says, oh, well, should I just buy one of those little shower filters? And I said, no, they don't work. Wow. You know, people have been so inundated with marketing on the issue of water filtration that they simply don't know. But no, all of the filters that I've sold for the past 12 years, I used to sell another brand prior to that. And if you go back to my old shows that are archived on my webpage, I may talk about those filters, but I don't sell them anymore. I would not recommend anybody buying them. So there's a lot of problems with those so-called, they're not even filters, they're black packaging foam. But anyway, be that as it may, the issue that I'm trying to instill in people's mind is you need a whole house water filter, something that is of commercial grade, and that's what I sell, the MR5 filters. But no, I still use my line of ceramic filters. I now have a new line of a completely new technology, And what were some of the big issues with ceramics? You can't make many of them. You're very limited in production. Okay, that's one of the big issues. The number two issue is they break in shipping. So if you're shipping these things to foreign countries or to an African relief situation or something like that, they probably aren't going to arrive in one piece. So I had to find a technology that didn't break in shipping. And I've been dealing with this recently with broken orders. Anyway, I've moved to a new technology with the water filter elements. So, you can see that on my webpage. Also, I have a very nice stainless steel above sink water filter. It's a new product, and it has a new style of filter also. So anyway, like I say, you can see that on the webpage. But my whole point here, it's not that anything is bad that people bought in the past. Your gravity water filter in the kitchen is not going to help you in the shower. And no, don't buy some stupid little shower filter that you screw on. It's not going to do anything. You're just going to make some company rich that's selling a product that's going to last. It doesn't even remove anything. You know what Brita advertises? Brita. I keep pounding on them because they're the worst offenders. But they advertise that their filters do not remove fluoride because it's so healthy for you. It's going to help your teeth. Drinking all that fluoride is good for your teeth. That's what Brita, because their filters don't take out fluoride. You got to get the fluoride out of your water. Yeah, the cities put it in there, and it's an absurdity, one of the absurdities that have come in to play, where all of these cities, municipalities voted in that they should put fluoride in your water. And you got to get that out of there. It affects your kids' growth patterns. It affects you. It makes people, it's the laundry list of effects is longer than I can read on the air. So you got to get that out of there. But the worst place for getting this is in the shower, where you're showering in that warm water. It's absorbed into your skin and you're breathing it in. That's where you get the biggest dose directly infused into your body every day. And so you got to get that out on a whole house level. And so that is what I'm saying. I'm encouraging people to get a whole house water filter. I have the best ones on the market. And unfortunately, there's some unscrupulous companies out there that are trying to sell water softeners as water filters. And they're not. Taking minerals out of your water, if you have hard water, or making it soft, taking magnesium and calcium out of your water, those are the two things that make your water hard, supposedly. So if you have a water softener in your house, that's what it's doing. It's removing some of these minerals, and so your water feels more slippery or more viscous. It's not hard. The soap forms better because the calcium, magnesium limit the formation of soap, for example. So soft water feels better. It's better for showering, etc. And the soap forms better when you're washing dishes or taking a shower, etc. But that is not a whole house water filter. That's the laundry list of things in your water today, including PFAS chemicals, is really huge. And so you have to get this stuff out of your water on a whole house basis. So that's what I'm telling people. I say I'm moving people away from their gravity water filter. And if you come to my webpage, I'm still selling lots of replacement water filter elements. Why? Because my competition selling like for two, $120 plus their add-on filter just to remove arsenic and fluoride, which only lasts for 500 gallons, is $39. That costs more. Just the add-on filter costs more than what my filter costs that removes it in the one filter. So anyway, that's what I'm telling people, is moving them to go to a whole house water filter. It's not that my previous products were bad or anything. It's just that it does not help you in the shower, period. Okay, hope I clarified that. Just a quick comment on this building in Florida that just decided to collapse one day. Apparently, this thing was having some serious problems previously. But now you have people running around in government that don't know anything about construction or buildings or whatever, don't know anything about anything, going, oh, this was due to climate change. Now everything can be tagged as climate change. Well, when I saw the picture of the rubble that they were picking up, it was like little teeny pieces of concrete. When this building broke apart, it should have been big sections of cement that were falling. And it shouldn't have fallen in the first place. So my suspicion is that the contractors were mixing sea sand in with the cement. So the cement had no strength right from the very beginning. So it was just a matter of time until this building fell down. And, the other thing that happens is as the cement fractures and you're right there on the sea, you get the sea salt and everything, which has nothing to do with climate change, starts rusting that iron rebar in the cement, which expands and it breaks the cement and it loses its strength. And so, I would look at the construction and examine the cement. Nobody's doing this. Here you got the city inspector, and they're talking about climate change. Oh, my goodness. The world has gone insane. The world has simply gone insane. That's all I can tell you. When woke people get a hold of stuff, that's the problem. Woke people don't know anything. They hear something and just jump up and down and, oh, let's do this. The climate change is changing. The buildings are falling down due to climate change. Oh, my goodness, boys and girls, time to buy that ranch in the country and move away and get away from anybody. No, it's insane out there, absolutely insane. Just a quick comment also on scaling. Scaling is building big things from small things. There's a guy that called in yesterday. I was on John Moore's show, and we were talking about things related to energy, and this guy goes, you could clean up water by using power from waves. And there again, that's another technology. They put these big steel floats out in the ocean and they bob up and down with the waves. And they got some device down below that creates energy, electricity. The amount of money that it takes to install one of those things, and let's take the amount of energy that thing will produce over its lifetime, will nowhere near equal the amount of energy it took to even make the thing, let alone break even and produce useful energy in the future. So in the number one point is that it will not solve the world energy problem. You'd have to cover the whole ocean. You'd have to cover the whole ocean with these things, and it still wouldn't produce enough energy for one little place. I think what I was talking about was the study I did on this show. I talked about it, Sierra Leone, that little country in Africa that has 100 inches of rain a year and has a water shortage problem. Boys and girls, hello, the water is falling from the sky in such quantities. The average place on Earth has less than 50 inches of rain per year. So they're getting the double average rainfall per year. And so that covering the land of the entire country is a massive amount of water to be used. And the example I was quoting on my radio show is if you took an ocean liner, I'm sorry, not an ocean liner, an oil tanker, and you cleaned it out or took brand new ones and shipped water. Say you went up to Greenland where the water, or down to the South Pole, where during the summertime of these respective places, you would have water, fresh water, just rolling off into the ocean. You could just park the boat there, and maybe a day it would fill up with water, and then you could move the boat up to Sierra Leone. And you would think, well, gee, that would sure solve their water problem, wouldn't it? Well, here are the actual numbers. The actual numbers are that if you did this and do the calculations, it would take 83 super tankers moving all the time. 83 super tankers of oil moving constantly to provide this country with a mere 5 gallons of water per day. No, I'm sorry, 20 gallons of water per day. 20 gallons is not much. The average person in a developed country uses 100 gallons of water per day. This is on average. So in the United States, for example, the 350 million people are using 3,500,000 gallons of water per day. And multiply that times 365, we're talking trillions of gallons of water. My point was, which I made last week also, was that with these companies, they have a solution. They have like a shipping container. And in 1 month, they can clean 200,000 gallons of water from PFAS chemicals. That's not a solution. That's a joke. That's a little teeny, teeny, weeny, weeny Band-Aid on a massive gushing wound of a problem. It's ridiculous. But you have government officials sitting in their offices going, oh, that's curing the problem. They have no idea what they're doing. So I talked about that last week. But anyway, the whole issue here is scaling. You can't take these solutions and scale them. The only way you're going to cure the problem of getting PFAS chemicals out of the water for individuals or any other chemicals for that matter, and it just drives me nuts when politicians get a hold of something. Remember, it was lead up in Flint, Michigan. Well, lead was the least of their problems from the Flint River. The amount of chemicals in the Flint River was unbelievable, but they only talked about lead. Now they're only talking about PFAS chemicals. They're ignoring all the other chemicals that the Environmental Protection Agency allowed people to pollute over the past 50 years. And I call them the Environmental Pollution Agency, because what they do is they give licenses to pollute. They go, oh, well, you can pollute this much, and then it's okay. And what they do is give a license so companies can pollute. And do you think those companies are monitored or actually abide by those limits? Of course not. Of course not. So anyway, the issue of scaling, when you have a solution to something, and this is something I had to deal with the wing generator, that was my primary focus on design, was can it scale large enough to actually solve the world energy problem? Okay, so now let's go to batteries. And I'm going to just preface this by stating that I'm able to get batteries. These are industrial grade, and I'll just tell you what they are. They're 200 amp hour 12 volt batteries. They're AGM glass mat gel batteries. So this is what you would use if you have a solar system or if you have a wind energy system, and this is what I sell with my wind packages. And also, I don't sell one or two. 20 is the minimum order. And so just to give you an idea of what it would cost, and this includes shipping, would be around this, and there's a lot of this in shipping, because shipping a battery is a major operation. And so 20 batteries would be a pallet full of batteries. You can get up to 40 batteries on a pallet, just to give you an idea. If you know what a shipping pallet looks like, you could get up to about 40 of these batteries on a single pallet. Okay, so the shipping goes by weight, and of course batteries are very heavy, so they don't go by volume, they go by weight in shipping. So if you wanted 20 batteries, just as a matter of scaling, it would cost you around $20,000. And that includes shipping to your door, you know. And each one is different, so I have to get a shipping company to do a quote to ship to your door, and then I send you an invoice, you pay the invoice, and we ship the batteries. And it takes about probably 6 to 8 weeks for them to arrive because of all of the processing that goes on. But I can get quantities of batteries, whereas nobody else can. That's the, anyway, but if you want to get batteries, just go to the webpage, any one of the webpages, and email, or on the water page, fill out the contact form, and say, hey, I want batteries, I want 20, I want 40, I want 32 batteries, but 20 is the minimum that we'll deal with. We won't send out seven batteries. No, that's not going to mess with that, unless you want to pay me $20,000 for seven batteries. So anyway, that's available, and just write us an email on the subject line, say batteries, and we will get back to you and send an invoice, and you can get your batteries. Okay, enough of that. But the reason I'm mentioning this also is because there's a problem with batteries. And it goes back to a number of issues in the supply chain. This is something that started happening some time ago. But because of fires, let me just list the fires here that occurred. And these are primarily with lithium-ion batteries. Now, that you could potentially start a fire with any battery. But what happens is when they ship the battery, they put a cover on the positive terminal so that you cannot short out between the positive and negative terminal. And so all of the negative terminals are there, so there's really no way to short these out. And the only way you're going to start a fire with most batteries is by shorting them out between the terminals. Lithium ion is different. Lithium ion can spontaneously combust. If there's a flaw somewhere in the middle of that battery, or this big fire that they had, was it in Chicago, where they had a paper warehouse and they didn't even know that they had lithium ion batteries stored there, like 2,000 tons of batteries in this place. And so the firefighters come and they start spraying water thinking it's a paper fire. And then they realize, hey, wait, these are lithium ion batteries. And they're trained, do not spray water on a lithium ion fire because it makes the short circuit worse. And so once one of these things breaks down, a little cell, a little teeny super small microcell in a lithium ion battery, then it starts discharging the energy around it. And then that starts to melt the battery and short circuit, and it keeps going. So this is a spontaneous reaction where this whole battery just consumes all the energy internally. And we're talking, like I say, in a car, in a Tesla car fully charged, we're talking about 100 kilowatt hours of energy. To give you an idea, if you took 40 of my big gel batteries, 40 of them, and hooked them all together in parallel or in series, whatever, and 40 of them. So these batteries are a foot and a half by a foot by a foot. That's about the dimensions of one of my AGM gel batteries, 200 amp hour, 12 volt. It would take 40 of them to equal one lithium ion battery for a Tesla automobile with 100 amp hours of energy stored in it. And all of a sudden, this thing starts internally discharging. That's a lot of power, or a lot of energy, excuse me, to use the correct term. That's a lot of energy that can be expended in a very short period of time, and nothing's going to withstand this. So anyway, back to the fires. There were two fires in ports in China where they all of a sudden the Chinese stopped shipping batteries because of the fires that they had in the ports. And these are port facilities, and all of a sudden you got a raging fire going with lithium-ion batteries. Okay, that's one issue. There was the guy who's had a brand-new Tesla. He'd only had it a couple days. He's driving down the road. He starts to see smoke, so he manages to get out before this entire car is engulfed in flames. And somebody calls the fire department, and one of the neighbors calls the fire department because this car is rolling down the street on fire. So anyway, the fire department responds and knew that you cannot spray water on this thing. There's nothing you can spray on it to stop the fire. It's unbelievable. I mean, you just have to let this thing burn until the whole car burned up, completely disintegrated. Okay, then there was the fire in a parking lot, another Tesla. Was sitting there, and it spontaneously combusted with the lithium-ion battery going up in smoke, and it caught the cars next to it on fire, and those caught the cars next to it on fire, and it burned down the whole level of this parking lot. It's like one of these underground cement parking lots where all the cars are, you know, next to each other. This one car caught on fire and burned down all of the cars in this parking lot. Gee, we're talking about major league lawsuit here. How would you like to come back to your car in a parking lot and find it completely burned because the guy down the road had a Tesla? Okay, and then the big fire, I just mentioned it in Illinois with the lithium-ion batteries going up in smoke. But I want to ask a question. When you start to see this level of fire activity, remember back about a month or two or three ago, there were food facilities all over the world, big, big food facilities, some of which harbored the grain supply for the entire year for the country, burned down. Now, it was very clear that somebody was going around setting these fires. We got a pyro somewhere in the deep state that's deciding that they're going to cut off major supply lines of essential goods. Food in that case, batteries in this case. Now, let's go through all of the things that require a battery. I talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the show. Your telephone, number one, that most people think of, their lithium-ion battery in their phone. And as I said, the batteries that are coming now don't last very long at all. You might be lucky to get 2 months' worth of work out of your cell phone. And as I said, I think it's due to 5G that's affecting, it's giving a resonant frequency in the lithium-ion battery, which is causing it to discharge internally. And so, so your telephone, your computer, your television, your UPS power supply has a lithium-ion battery in it. That's the thing that you put before your TV or your computer to protect it from surges when the power company can't supply decent controlled power for you. What else? Your automobile? Hey, if you're driving a regular automobile, you know, when you turn off the key and the radio stays on, etc., well, that's running off your main battery, which is typically a lead-acid battery. But there's all kinds of things in there that require a little battery, and those are lithium-ion. Very standard. So what happens? How about your laundry, your washing machine? If it's new, it probably has a lithium-ion battery. Kitchen appliances, your blender, your juicer, your toaster, if you have a modern with controls on it, you have controls, etc., and other appliances in the kitchen. How about your power tools? You know, your Ryobi or your hand tools that have a lithium-ion battery pack. Those batteries are failing much sooner than they should. And, I mean, if you're in construction and you're on the job and your battery is failing, you just bought this nice brand-new lithium-ion battery for your tool, you know, a drill or a little handsaw, and I got these. I like them because you can carry them any place. You don't have a cord. You don't have to worry about electricity, and they do a pretty good job. And if you have a few backup batteries, hey, you're good to go for the day, pretty much. You can use that tool out there on the job and not worry about dragging an electric cord around. But anyway, all of this stuff depends on lithium-ion batteries. And what if this industry as a whole starts going south? Well, it's a critical industry, like food, like anything else. And so I have kind of a list here of critical items, and I'm going to read these because if you're a person that's involved in preparing for the future for a rainy day, as they say, or not only a rainy day, but a day when it doesn't rain or whatever, here are the things in order that are most essential. And by the way, if you look at my product line, I don't sell flashlights, I don't sell shoes, I don't sell camping gear. I don't sell lots of things that I could sell. I sell very essential items for water, energy, and food. Those are my big three. But anyway, those are the first three in line. And so breathing is the number one, having air. And of course, they want to tax you on that. So air is the first one. That you need every second. You need to breathe clean air. Then water is after that, then food. You can go for a number of days without eating, but you need water. Then heat and shelter, those go together. Those are essential because if you don't have a clean place to live, a secure place, a place where you can sleep securely at night, then you have an issue. Then sanitation. If you don't have a good clean place, and that's where water comes in, you have to be able to clean things. And especially little kids are very susceptible to things of sanitation. That's why in third world countries where they have poor water, the death rate for kids is very high because of sanitation. Sewage goes along with that, getting rid of sewage. Human waste is tremendously toxic. What can grow on human waste that affects the human biological systems is unbelievable. But there again, this is related to water in that we spend most of the water that is used today is used to flush human waste down the toilet to a facility. And this problem has been solved ages and ages ago, where you have dry toilets, you're not using all of that massive amount of water, and the after the human waste breaks down, you can use it for fertilizer because it's broken down. All of the material there is down to a biological level that you can just spread it around the garden. And so just take for Los Angeles, for example, you could have dry toilets. You would have plenty of water left over and for all other uses. There's a statistic that I came across that in 3 days, Los Angeles flushes down the toilet. It's millions of toilets, of course. Flushes down more water down its toilets than it uses all the rest of the year for every other purpose, Los Angeles. So that gives you an idea of how much water we use to work with sewage. And you take a little bit of water, or you take some human waste and a little bit of pee, which is could be dried out, and especially in a place like Los Angeles. Okay, and that takes very little energy. The amount of energy it takes to provide all that water to people is another issue. That's a lot of energy. If you you take some human waste, some dry human waste, a couple ounces of it, and then some pee. The pee is very easy to deal with as long as you keep it separate from the dry human waste. And then what you do is you dry this out and you can use it. But if you're using a wet toilet, a water-based toilet, you take a little bit of dry waste, you mix it with 3-4 gallons of water, then you mix it down into the sewer tube with all the other water you're using in the house. So all the other water you've used in the house gets polluted, and you take it to a treatment plant. And so, this is absolutely insane. It might work for a small town, but once you get up to a city, it doesn't work anymore. And there are countries like in the Northern Europe, in the Scandinavia, where they use dry toilets exclusively. They're used to doing this. It's the way they do things because they don't have good treatment systems. They don't have a lot of fresh water to deal with this. So they've been using dry toilets for forever. Okay, then kitchen and utensils. You need a kitchen where you can cook food, clean food, etc., and have the proper cooking utensils so that you can cook food and then clean all the dishes so you can start over for the next meal. And so cooking and energy. So these are the tier one essentials. I'll read them again. Air, water, food, heat, shelter, sanitation, sewage, kitchen, utensils, cooking, energy. The energy that it takes to cook food. I mean, it's just essential for operating your house. Now the tier two necessities, you can live without these, but not very well, not on a modern level. So light, electricity, transportation, communication, and batteries are essential to all of these. Batteries, and especially now the dependency on lithium-ion batteries. And there's another level of tier two defense, national, local, and personal defense, is another necessity because if somebody can come in and attack you whether it's your personal one or if you are out in your car and somebody robs you, which the crime rate is just going through the ceiling now that they're bringing in untold numbers of fugitives from other countries, dumping them all over the country. These people have no place to go. They get into gangs. They rob, raping, robbing. This is not a humanitarian thing to do. And you're certainly not thinking about the people of your own country. But anyway, defense. Your ability to just walk down the street and not have your purse robbed or your daughter, eyed up by some guy that's, following you around. These are essential things. But you see, right in the middle of this are batteries. The modern life, let me read these over again. Light, electricity, transportation, communication, and all of these batteries are essential. Okay, and so the whole issue with batteries is I want to make it clear that we are in a crisis, in a worldwide crisis now, because the supply chain, and it's because there's a plethora of new companies producing lithium-ion batteries that are very poor quality. They're flooding the market and with cheap, very poor quality lithium-ion batteries. And the whole issue of batteries is the dependency on batteries that we have. So, in fact, I've got two phones sitting right next to me right now that have bad lithium-ion batteries in them. And what do you do? And they're at the point where it used to be that you could take an appliance and plug it in, because there's an electric cord, like with a phone, etc. Just plug it in and it would work. But now, without the lithium-ion battery, the way these things are designed, without the lithium-ion battery, it will not run at all, even if you put an electric cord on it. So anyway, that's what I wanted to concentrate on this week. And the question is somebody sabotaging the battery supply chain? That is my question, because all of these fires, all of a sudden, within a few week period, it's just a little bit too coincidental. And just quickly, the Tesla cars, what if somebody could get in those and hack into them and cause a fire? Or if you have self-driving vehicles, what if you're driving your self-driving vehicle and somebody can hack into that car and cause an accident? You're going down the road 60 miles an hour and they turn you into the oncoming lane. I'm sorry, I don't want this kind of technology. I don't want it anywhere near me or anybody I know. Okay, I'm out of time. This is James McCanny. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, or go to the water filter page, jmccwaterfilters.com, and support me. That's the only way I get support, is when you buy products or join my Patreon channel. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.